as far as my normal nutrition goes, pretty balanced these days, Kim, mm-hmm. as my main goal is always to get the protein in, and I'm getting in generally on most days 2 to 2.2 grams per kilogram. So great. That's 140 to 150 grams of protein a day is my focus. Yep. Some days are less than that, some days are more. Yep. And then I don't fret over fats and carbs. I check in with myself a few times a year. So I'll count calories for a little stage just to make sure, I'm not lying to myself.
Yeah.
And it's amazing just how much your mindset changes when you start actually counting it. So you just, it forces you to make an internal decision every time rather than just mindlessly picking up whatever you want.
Right.
But yeah, the carbs are, I'm a sucker for carbs. I mean,
yeah.
I probably couldn't do what I do if I didn't have a bunch of carbs in my system.
For sure. I mean, especially with the duration of the runs that you're doing. And I like that you say that you know, you check in, you do track, because some folks, you know, tracking is an everyday thing. They enjoy it. Some folks it's not, you know, helpful, or it might be, you know, maybe it's just, you know, can be irritating or whatever it might be, but just checking in from time to time so that you know where you're at, I think is so helpful, because it can give you some clues as to, yeah, I am feeling more tired lately. Oh, I have been kind of slacking on my protein or my, you know, recovery carbohydrate incorporation that into the meals. You know, it's just good to check in. And I think it gives you some good data. Hi, welcome to the Active Bariatric Nutrition Podcast. I'm your host, Kim Tirapelli, a bariatric sports dietitian, and I help post-bariatric clients achieve their fitness goals through better nutrition and addressing the problems that come from typical bariatric and sports nutrition advice that just don't work for an active bariatric lifestyle. Welcome to episode 17 of the Active Bariatric Nutrition Podcast. I'm your host, Kim Tirapelli. I am excited today to have a guest joining us all the way from Australia, Adam Fitzhenry. Adam had vertical sleeve gastrectomy surgery in June 2017 after suffering from obesity since he was a teenager. His max weight was north of 275 pounds, and he has since lost 130 pounds. He currently weighs 146 pounds. In 2019, he underwent a belt lipectomy to remove loose skin from his midsection. Adam turns 40 this year and has been married for almost 15 years. They have two healthy and active children. In the 6 years since his bariatric surgery, he has found the love of fitness and running. He works out most days with a mix of strength training, running, and cycling. He has completed a couple of ultra marathons as well as several road marathons, which is where his training passion lies. When Adam committed to surgery, he never wanted to just end up skinny or smaller. He mainly wanted to be healthy. He also wanted to be strong and athletic. He wanted to take advantage of the process to completely overhaul his life so that he could enjoy being the parent and hopefully grandparent he truly wants to be. Adam discovered an immense drive and discipline that he never knew existed inside of him, and it keeps getting stronger each year out. It is the consistency which has helped ensure the changes he has made in the early days of his journey become habits and keys to his success. Thank you so much for being here today, Adam.
Oh, thanks very much for having me, Kim.
I'm so glad you're here, and you're all the way from Australia. My first guest outside the, you know, well, really, certainly not from Australia. I haven't had anyone from, so.
Yeah, listening back to that little bio there, in an American accent, and it makes it all feel a little bit more real, to be honest.
Sure. And I know we kind of talked a little bit offline, and, you know, it was before we recorded today, but I'm just super glad that you agreed to come on the podcast. You said this is the first time you're on a podcast, which I'm super honored to have you on.
Yeah, first time. I mean, as you said, I've been in nearly 6 years since surgery now, and I think I've done a pretty decent job. So I'm hoping one of my intentions for this year was to maybe reach out and try and help a few more people out.
I love that. Well, tell us a little bit more about your background around why you had bariatric surgery and how it's impacted your life.
Well, I often feel when people get asked this question, the answers all sound the same. You know, we're battled with being overweight our whole life, and we can all relate to each other where, you know, living an obese life it's a hard way to live a life. But yeah, as a child, I started gaining weight pretty young. Had a pretty tough time through high school with, you know, kids being kids. Sure. And then, yeah, some other life upheavals through high school, and then in my early 20s I got diagnosed with a condition called ankylosing spondylitis, which is a type of arthritis which affects especially your lower spine, SI joints, pelvis, mm-hmm. which caused a basically me to be pretty immobile. So I've got more and more sedentary, more and more pain. You know, treated myself with a whole lot of pain medication and emotional eating to try and deal with it, and the weight, you know, kept coming on. And then I was lucky enough to find an amazing woman that I was able to marry pretty young. And then we had a couple of kids, and when my second child came along, my little boy, sort of got to a point where, you know, life was flashing in front of my eyes, and I was getting towards my mid-30s, and I was just getting bigger. And then one thing happened one afternoon driving home from work. I had a micro sleep in the car. So I used to always get really fatigued in the afternoon. A couple of people mentioned that maybe I had sleep apnea, and I always thought, nah, I sleep fine. I sleep 12 hours a night. You know, I can fall asleep at the drop of the hat. Sleep's not a problem for me. I did have sleep apnea. I had horribly bad sleep apnea after a sleep study. But I saw somebody, an acquaintance, who'd lost a lot of weight fast, and I reached out and I said, what's going on? And he was kind enough to share his whole story, you know, step me through the entire process of him going through the VSG surgery and what it meant to him and how it changed his life. And he'd also found running, but at that stage on running wasn't part of my plan at all. But yeah, shortly after having that discussion with Steve, I reached out to my GP, and they recommended a clinic which, you know, had all the psychologists and the nutritionists as well. And I booked in there, and within a few months I was going under the knife. But yeah, obviously, you know, having the couple of young kids was probably the catalyst to that. And then a few little things happening, you know, work was hard. Life was hard, you know. I couldn't keep up with the kids, and enough was enough. I'd tried all the standard stuff that everyone tries, you know, the yo-yo diets, the shakes, the everything. Like I said at the start, I mean, you hear this story 100 times. But yeah, I just once I'd made that decision, though, it kind of just flicked a bit of a switch inside of me, which was pretty cool. Didn't expect it to last. But, you know, those habits just get built brick by brick.
Sure. I love that. Gosh, I love hearing that. And you know, everybody's journey is so different. But I love to hear that, you know, everybody's path kind of to getting to surgery is different in terms of what's, you know, the motivating factor. And it sounds like you have a beautiful family. And I can't wait to talk, which we're going to get into here, about all the training and the ultra marathons and things, which you are definitely my first ultra marathon guest. That is amazing. Unbelievable. But before I get to that, let me ask you, you had plastic surgery as well. You said that you had that belt lipectomy. So tell us a little bit about that journey. And when did you have that? How did that all go for you?
So, funnily enough, probably the first 6 to 12 months after surgery, you know, I lost weight really fast. I got down to my goal weight within like 7 months, and got way below the surgeon. My surgeon goal weight for me was 85 kilos, which is like 190 pounds, nearly 200 pounds. Sure. And I got solidly below that. And I always swore that I wouldn't get skin removal surgery. You know, I thought it was purely for aesthetics, and, you know, people just get into this whole looking at what other people are doing and copying, and, you know, all that, those people, you lose your weight, you get surgery, and then you're done. And then, yeah it's kind of was a bit of a rite of passage, especially at the time in the weight loss surgery community 4 or 5 years ago.
Sure.
And then as I got more and more into the running, especially, my skin was paper thin. I don't want to sound too arrogant, but I was really lean. I mean, I could move my belly skin up and down and my chest skin up and down, and you could see all the striations in my abdomen, and it was unbelievable. And what comes with that is it tears easily, it scratches easily. You know, I'm using really high waist compression while I'm trying to run, you know, 30-mile-plus runs. And then I went and talked to a plastic surgeon, and he – really put my mind at ease, and he was really impressed with my story. He thought I'd have fantastic results. We spoke about what would be the right surgery for me, and he thought because of my body composition and where I was at and how lean I was, he recommended a full belt lipectomy, which is effectively a 360 lower body lift, all the way around, basically where you put a belt around your body. And then, so I booked in for that, but I booked in for that for 12 months' time. So I booked that in a little bit shorter than 12 months' time. So I ended up going through the actual surgery in the middle of 2019, which was a little over 2 years after my original surgery. I'd been at my goal weight or below my goal weight and maintaining really well for 18 months before I did that. I told myself if I was going to go through it, I wanted to make sure that I was capable of maintaining my weight loss. Again, Kim, you will see it all the time. People regain weight after surgery. It's pretty normal. Right. Some people only regain a little bit. Some people regain a lot. And I wanted, I've always got that kind of nagging fear in the back of my mind that I don't want to do that. So I needed to be sure for myself that I was ready for that.
Yeah. So it sounds like you gave yourself that time. You make sure you could maintain, and then you went ahead and proceeded with the surgery.
Yeah. And the surgery itself, you know, my body was in good nick. I was fit and healthy, and then you're lying in a hospital bed, can't move for a few days. I mean, they get you up and walk around, but a full belt like pectomy, for me, was by far a much more difficult surgery than the VSG in the first place. You know, I've been training pretty much every day. I ran the Gold Coast Marathon 2 weeks before my belt lipectomy. So I was fit. The morning of surgery, I went and ran a half marathon.
Oh gosh. Morning of
my plastic surgery.
Oh my goodness. You were like, I'm getting one more run in.
Pretty much. Exactly. I wouldn't recommend that. But yeah, so I had the surgery, great surgeon, great hospital here in Brisbane. I recommend him to pretty much everyone I talk to that reaches out and asks me about plastic surgery. The recovery was hard. I mean, like I said, you go from running a half marathon without hardly breaking a sweat before the surgery to not being able to do anything for weeks at a time, being in compression for 3 months, you know, worried about the scar tearing and all the incision tearing and making sure that you're not having any infections. You got drains for a while too. I went home with drains for a week. That was mentally really challenging. You know, not only can't I work out, which is one way I deal with my emotional baggage these days.
Right.
I then can't eat hardly anything because you're wearing compression, your restrictions back with a vengeance. So I've got a bit stir crazy and a bit of cabin fever, but no, I got through it. But it was really hard.
When were you cleared to like go back to like exercising after the surgery?
I guess the surgeon was fantastic. So from day one, my first appointment, I knew it was going to be hard. He knew it was going to be hard. So right from that first appointment, he's kind of started laying out a plan. So sort of from a week out, you can start doing short walks as long as your heart rate stays nice and low. And then from a few weeks, I can do a little bit of upper body stuff, you know, sitting down. And then a couple of weeks later, you can start doing a little bit more. And then I introduced jogging at about 8 to 10 weeks, really careful jogging. But, you know, the one big thing that he wouldn't let me do, which is right, was cycling and rowing. So anything bending over, which really puts a lot of tension on the back scar, is where the most tension is. So, yeah, anything that involves hinging was pretty much off limits for the first 3 months.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Gosh, it's almost like you're like starting over again. I mean, you know, going back to kind of the very beginning of before you had the surgery, and then you had your surgery and you're starting baby steps, building slowly. It sounds like you had to go through that whole process all over again.
Oh, it absolutely is. It almost feels like you're even further back from square one than you were in the first place. And it's just people that have followed me. There's some people I've made some really good relationships through the Instagram community. It's been a little bit of a running theme in my journey. You know, 6 or 7 months after my plastic surgery, when I was hitting my straps again, I had a cycling accident.
This is
an Australian story for you.
Okay,
I'm just starting a morning training ride, so it was just on just before the sun was coming up. So I had my headlight on my bike, riding down a hill near home, about 25, 28 miles an hour. Kangaroo jumps out and I hit it square with my bike and straight over the handlebars, knocked myself out, broke my neck.
Oh my gosh.
So, well, thankfully there was stable fractures of C6 and C7.
Okay.
But yeah, a couple of nights in hospital, and again, there you go. And then one of the big things from that was I had a massive hematoma on my lower back, right, that straddled my incision from my surgery. So I ended up back in hospital. The plastic surgeon had to open me up and clean me all out. And yeah, so that was, again, and same deal. Basically, that was exactly almost the same recovery all over again 6 months later.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
But I've been, I haven't had a hospital trip for a few years now, so touch wood.
Hey, knock on wood. You got
Yeah, that's it.
I was going to say, your resilience to come through these multiple different things is very clear, obviously. And I bet that's been something that's been consistent throughout your journey, is it sounds like, you know, you've gone through a lot of hard phases.
There's been, there's been a few hiccups along the way. And as I said right at the start, living an obese life is a very hard life. And I don't forget that, and I don't take that for granted. And knowing that, you know, when I do, if I do come back or I have an injury or I have an issue, the alternative is far harder than what I've got to deal with now.
Sure. Oh, that's a good piece of advice for folks too. Hearing that. Yeah. But let's talk about your training, because I want to hear about these ultra marathons, because I'm serious when I say you are literally the first bariatric, you know, client that I've talked to that's done an ultra marathon. You've done two, in fact. So tell us a little bit about that, just for folks that don't know. Can you give us, what are the distances, if you don't mind, in miles, for our US fans here? What's the distance you're doing for an ultra marathon?
So the couple of ultra marathons I've done two very different ultra marathons. The first one I did was, they're both the same distance, but very different events. So they were 50 Ks, which is, you know, 32, 33 miles. So not too much longer than a standard marathon. But hey, I'll take it. Yeah. The first one I did in 2018. So it was less than 18 months after surgery. And it was a road ultra marathon in December on the Gold Coast in 30 plus
hot.
Degree.
Australia.
So 90 plus Fahrenheit.
Oh my gosh.
Worst experience of my life, hands down. Worst experience. I got carried away early days with, like I think I sort of indicated earlier, you know, watching other people and getting carried away with going further and further and further too fast, you know.
Sure.
Oh, this guy's doing a half marathon, so I'll do that. Yeah. Oh, they're doing a full marathon, oh, I'll do that. Oh, next is an ultra marathon, right? And I was horribly underprepared. My body wasn't conditioned for it. I cramped from like halfway from 12 or 13 miles, 14 or 15 miles. Hobbled in, they were starting to pack up, you know, I was only five or six people from the end of the race, and I pretty much retired from running that day about six times. I remember FaceTiming my wife battling towards the end, because I didn't want her to worry that I was taking so long.
Right.
Saying, I'm never doing this again.
Sure. You're like, this is it.
Yeah. Much like after she reached over to me after having our second child and said to me, I'm never doing this again. But again, you know, the pain of that fades pretty fast. And then I bounced back from that. And then I entered another 50 kilometer, which is again, 32, 33 miles, but it was a trail, an ultra trail event. In the Blue Mountains, west of Sydney, so stunning scenery, but 8,000 plus feet of elevation as well.
Oh my gosh!
Just to go into it, but through a beautiful countryside. So, I learned my lesson. I trained much more, much better for that one. So, you know, 4 to 5 runs per week on a mix of hard surface and a lot of trails, and you know, power hiking and trying to get a lot of vert in on my long runs during Sundays, and far more concentrated on time on legs, so that my body was a bit better conditioned. Mm-hmm. That event was in 2021, that one. So, about nearly 2 years ago now. And I was, had a far better performance that day. I didn't cramp too badly at all. Finished strong, beat my goal time by about 30 minutes.
Oh my gosh.
And came out of that just buzzing. But I also came out of that realizing that I'd ticked the ultra marathon box, and I'm not sure I'll go back to that box now.
You're good.
I'm pretty good
now. Scratch that itch. You're done with it.
Yeah, exactly. And my passion definitely lies further in the marathon and in a road marathon. I love building up to it. Right now I'm in a bit of a base building phase, so I'm just trying to maintain a good base as through the summer here. It's not really conducive to too much long running. Our endurance season here is through winter. I've 4 to 5 runs per week at the moment. Usually total somewhere between, you know, around 40 miles. something like that.
I was just going to ask you that. Yeah. So typical day, how many miles would you say per day you go?
Well, I'll run you through a quick week. I'll try not to stay too long.
So,
Tuesday at the moment. So, Monday morning, Monday is generally a really easy day. Obviously, on a Sunday, I've come off a long run. So Monday generally will be a strength day. I'll do a strength, an upper body session, a bunch of core. And usually, depending on how I pull up from my Sunday run, I'll add some mobility work, especially around my hips and pelvis because of my ankylosing spondylitis. Generally, I'm pretty tight.
Sure.
So it's usually 60 minutes, low impact for that session. Tuesday is speed work, so a run, generally somewhere between 8 to 10 miles, probably more like 6 to 8 miles. So today, this morning I've been out and trained. I did 10 kilometres, which is a bit over 6 miles total, including in that was six hard 1 kilometre reps. So that's Tuesday. Tuesday, that's always pretty much speed work. Wednesday is a recovery jog, so a nice, really slow jog, 3 to 4 miles, 3 to 5 miles. Usually I'll do that on the treadmill, in some nice soft shoes, and then I'll go straight into a leg session in my gym. So I'll jump off the treadmill and punish myself with my legs a little bit.
got it.
While they're still a bit sore from the day before, so I'm not impacting myself too much later in the week. Sure. Thursday is another easy day. I don't run on Thursday. So Thursday, if I'm feeling really beat up, I'll take a rest day.
Yeah.
Otherwise, what I've been doing mostly lately through this building phase is another strength day. Usually pretty much a full body strength day. I like to do a fair bit of core work most days as well. Friday is another session. But Friday is more of a running tempo session, so longer reps, so more based around half marathon type pace. That'll be a bit longer than Tuesday, so more 8 to 10 miles, depending on what sort of phase I'm in. Saturday, again, another easy day. So that's one thing that you probably I do a lot of easy running.
Sure.
And a lot of people should probably do more easy running than they realize. Saturday's generally just a really slow run. I try and do Saturday socially, so we have park run. Yeah, I know park run is a little bit, the park run is coming to America. I know there's a few around now, but park run's massive here in Australia.
Which is where people just meet up and you just go for a run?
They're organized events. They're free, and basically most towns and cities have heaps of them, but most towns basically they're 5Ks, so 3.1 miles. You get timed, and it's a basically anyone. So anyone from almost elite runners right through to people that just walk in an hour.
It's
a great way to meet people, great way to get into running. And I probably credit that with my credit parkrun a lot with my early progress in running.
Sure.
And then Sunday on Saturday, often on Saturday as well, and on Thursday as well, sometimes I'll throw a ride in. That's when I'll jump on the bike. Just as a bit of a – if I want to double or if I – I really am a sucker for punishment. I'll jump on the bike and have a Zwift session. Unfortunately, since my kangaroo accident, I haven't been able to get myself back outside on a ride. But sure. I'll get there, maybe not.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Maybe.
But yeah, I really like the bike. Low impact, great aerobic building.
Good cross training. I love all your cross. I love that you're lifting, because especially with the amount of running that you're doing too, I think that that's such an important message to share with folks, is that the cross training is so important for balance, posture, mobility, you know, just obviously strengthening muscles in different ways so that you can be the most efficient when you're moving your body in terms of running or cycling. I think that's excellent.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely credit that with a lot of the fact that I've been able to, you know, especially the last couple of years being pretty injury free. And then Sunday is the long run. So Sunday is always a long run. It's always generally with a couple of friends. And I live out in the country, about an hour west of Brisbane, and I love just running, getting on the country roads and running between the farms and along the creeks and just zoning out for a couple of hours. It's nothing beats it. Nothing beats it. So
I was going to say, I've seen some of your posts when you do your pictures. I love them. I'm always like, I love Australia. I know I told you this. I studied abroad there for a semester and I love Australia. And when you said the Blue Mountains, we went and hiked the Three Sisters? Isn't that what that little mountain range there is?
Yeah.
And so I know what you mean about the elevation, but I loved all your pictures. You guys, you should definitely follow Adam online because he's got gorgeous pictures in Australia.
Yeah, that's kind of, I feel like sometimes my Sunday runs are an excuse just to try and find some different compositions and pictures of areas that I've, it's, yeah, it adds another element to why I enjoy Sunday runs so much. So,
nice.
And they can be anywhere from, you know, on a down phase sort of 12 miles and up to, yeah, right in the thick of a training block, 20 miles.
Yeah.
Wow. On Sunday, just gone. Yesterday for you, a couple of days ago for myself, it was about 15 miles. So,
okay. Just so we all know, are you currently, what are you training for? You said you're in a base kind of training session right now. What are you training for right now? Is there a particular race you're looking at scheduling?
So I'm planning on running a marathon at the back end of this year. So, I've done 100 of them, but I've not done a marathon twice. I've tried to do a different one each year. So I'm aiming for one in October this year, leading up to that, between now and then, I'll pick a couple of half marathons to have hit outs at. I've entered a mass participation race at the World Cross Country Championships, which are being held in Australia this year. In a couple of weeks. So I'm really looking forward to getting down to Bathurst, which is a bit west of Sydney, and having a hit out on the same course as the World Championships, which will be great. Just a bit of fun. Between now and that marathon block, basically the plan is to try and get my 5K time down, get my 10K time down, work on a bit of speed, and then hit the start of that building phase, which will generally be 12 to 16 weeks, as fit as I can to really launch into that block and take some minutes off my marathon PR.
Yeah, I love that. What is your PR for a marathon?
So I ran a PR last year on the Sunshine Coast of 3:44.
Awesome.
3 hours 44. My sort of medium term goal, I'd love to get under 3:30, but that'll probably take a couple more marathons yet. Try not to bite off too much more than I can chew. But 3:30, my goal is 3:30, and I'm not built like a runner. You said it in my bio. I didn't just want to be skinny, you know. That's where a lot of this strength training comes into. It's not just to support my running. I want to look athletic. I've got aesthetic goals as well. And I want to be strong and fit and healthy for a long time, and I want to be able to show off in the kids' park, you know, do pull-ups on the monkey bars and get the kids. They love it.
Hey, that's my dad.
It's kind of cool, right? Especially living on the sidelines for so many years, being able to do that sort of stuff now is pretty special.
Yeah, absolutely. And you cherish it. Yeah, I hear you. Let's talk about the nutrition part of this, because I love all
that's
the training
what we're
information.
About,
yeah. I mean, you know, I like that kind of parts, you know, something I like to chat about. I think it's important to lay the foundation as to what you're doing for your training, understanding what you're working towards. And then we layer that now with how you've dealt with this with your nutrition. So talk to me about, you know, just when you're doing your typical day-to-day training runs, you know, tempo runs, what do you have like pre-workout? What do you typically eat before a run?
You're not going to like me, Kim. I train really early. So
that's okay.
So I train really early now. So I get up at 4 o'clock every day without fail. I don't even use an alarm hardly anymore, which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
I train fasted a lot. So on easy days, on easy jog days, and generally strength days as well, I'll train fasted first thing. Usually aided by caffeine, and then protein straight after. So, but on a hard run day, so like for this morning for a run session, especially on my long run days, I'll get up and walk straight to the kitchen and make some toast, and slather it with Vegemite, which is nice and salty.
Yummy.
I
never could come around to that. When I was in Australia, I'm like, I am going to have Vegemite and I'm going to enjoy it. And I just couldn't come around to it. It's a very salty jelly. It is very different.
You've got to have it very, the amount is very important. You've got to have it very, you've got to have a minuscule amount.
Gotcha.
I didn't like it until my early 30s. So, but now I love it. It's some good salts before a long run is always a good thing.
Definitely.
So straight after my sessions, I'll make breakfast and have that before I head to work. So most of the time that's, you know, an egg based with some protein added to that. I love scrambled eggs or making omelets. Quick and easy and pretty nutritious. You can add what you like to them, which is great.
Totally.
And then I've kind of all the way through my journey, I've stuck to a few basic principles, which again, we're all generally fed these when when we go through the surgery. So stay hydrated.
Yep.
And that doesn't mean drinking a gallon or 2 gallons of water a day. It means making sure your pee looks more like tap water than dirty river water.
right.
And so generally, I mean, 2 to 2.5 liters I get in a day, which is what, a half a gallon, and I'm plenty hydrated on that. Protein first, prioritize protein at every meal. So yeah, stay hydrated, prioritize protein. Yeah. I have always tried to minimize calories via drinks. So still do that now. I'll always choose a food source rather than a liquid source if I can.
Mm-hmm.
And before a big session, and especially before a race, I'll have an electrolyte drink before bed at night. So you guys would be familiar with like Tailwind and that sort of stuff over there. I've got a local one here in Australia called Trail Brew, which is kind of, it does a similar kind of thing, but it has far fewer ingredients, and it's a couple of the things in Tailwind. I've tried Tailwind a lot. It sort of upsets my stomach a little bit. So the Trail Brew seems to work pretty well for me the night before. And that kind of helps me, you wake up a bit more hydrated and
prehydrated.
And I'll probably talk about this as we move on, but the hydration and getting ahead of that, not letting yourself fall behind in hydration when you're running endurance events is just so damn important.
Key. Yeah. And tell us, what do you typically carry on your longer runs? Like, do you carry something that has carbohydrates and electrolytes?
Yeah. So I guess a typical really long run, I'll get up early. I'll have some toast. Before I run, I'll try and have like 0.5 liter.
Mm-hmm.
Of fluid, mostly just water, but you have that before I start, and then I always carry anything over anything. If I'm running more than an hour, I'll carry something. So I've got a belt where I've got a soft flask, and in that soft flask, 500 ml soft flask for long runs and for races will always be Morton 320 drink mix. I've tried a lot of things through this whole period. I've had a lot of cramps. I've got myself carried away with thinking the cramps were all down due to salts and they're all due to that sort of stuff. But I mean, the research tells when you come to cramps, it's nearly always due to conditioning, not so much your salt level. So, generally if you're drinking an electrolyte drink, at least some stage, and you're having some gels as well, you'll cover your salts off. You're not going to have too much of a problem with that. So that Morton drink mix will generally give me 90 minutes. I'll sip that over 90 minutes. So that's got 80 grams of carbs in it. So that's 50 to 55 grams an hour, which seems to be about my sweet spot.
Yep.
And then after that's finished, I'll switch to gels.
What kinds do you have? What is that? Oh, there's the Morton. Yeah, that's the drink mix. I love that you have it there.
It's a bit bright, but yeah, I've got that's the drink mix. So that mixes into 500 mils. Mm-hmm. Really inoffensive taste. It's not sweet. And then the hemogels. My favorite.
You like hammer gels. Okay. Yeah. We have those.
Exactly.
Here.
They're from the States, and I just buy them. I buy them in bulk, and they're 90 calories. So about 20 grams of carbs.
Yeah.
And I'll have one of these every 5 kilometers. So every 3 miles.
There you go.
After that, which again gives me about 50 to 55 grams an hour in an event, or if I'm running really long, I'll top up my bottle. And also I'll have water with me, or I'm stopping at every drink table and just having some water, just having a sip at each. Well, I won't stop, but I'll pick it up and run and sip along as I go. But I find having that drink before I start, having that first 500 mils in the first 90 minutes, generally I stay ahead of the hydration curve then.
Yeah.
And I finish feeling pretty well.
I'm so glad you said that, staying ahead, because I think, trial and error, everybody's got to kind of live and learn the hard way sometimes, which is I feel great. I'm going to just keep going. I don't need anything. And then you're an hour in and you haven't had much. I mean, yes, you hit the wall. I've been there. I've run several marathons and I've done that. It's unpleasant, because once you get to that point, it's hard to recover. I mean, you can't.
Exactly.
That's it. You're in trouble. And the rest of your race is going to be miserable for the most part, and if you can even finish it at all. So I love this. I like like that you're pre-hydrating the night before. And, you know, and I'll say something about, you know, training fasted. You know, some folks, it is nearly impossible to get something in, or just, you know, it's something that you're used to. And what I like to hear that you're saying is that at least the night before you are taking an electrolyte drink, so you're pre-hydrating. And then, of course, you know, yeah, ideally, if you could get some carbohydrates in, that'd be great. But as long as you, especially if you're out there for longer than an hour, you have a strategy while you're on the course or you're on your run, and then you're recovering properly throughout the day, you're eating protein, carbohydrates at your meals. I mean, if it works for you, it works for you, you know, and we have to all find, I think that's the biggest key, is finding what works best for you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I guess another reason why I do train fasted, and just be clear, it's mostly my easy days where I'm training fasted.
Sure. Short runs. Yeah.
Yeah. I can't get the fluids in if I'm trying to smash food and then straight away I'm training, because I'm training so early. I'm pretty time poor in the mornings. It's that always that balance of, you know, getting some food in and then I've got to wait to drink, because I still have issues with that now down the track. So, the night before is pretty important for me, and Saturday night before a Sunday run or before a race. As far as my normal nutrition goes, pretty balanced these days, Kim. Mm-hmm. As my main goal is always to get the protein in, and I'm getting in generally on most days 2 to 2.2 grams per kilogram. So
great.
That's 140 to 150 grams of protein a day is my focus. Yep. Some days are less than that, some days are more. Yep. And then I don't fret over fats and carbs. I check in with myself a few times a year, so I'll count calories for a little stage, just to make sure I'm not lying to myself.
Yeah.
And it's amazing just how much your mindset changes when you start actually counting it. So you just, it forces you to make an internal decision every time, rather than just mindlessly picking up whatever you want.
Right.
But yeah, the carbs are, I'm a sucker for carbs. I mean, I probably couldn't do what I do if I didn't have a bunch of carbs in my system.
For sure. I mean, especially with the duration of the runs that you're doing. And I like that you say that you know, you check in, you do track, because some folks, you know, tracking is an everyday thing. They enjoy it. Some folks it's not, you know, helpful, or it might be, you know, maybe it's just, you know, can be irritating or whatever it might be, but just checking in from time to time so that you know where you're at, I think is so helpful, because it can give you some clues as to, yeah, I am feeling more tired lately. Oh, I have been kind of slacking on my protein or my, you know, recovery carbohydrate incorporation that into the meals. You know, it's just good to check in. And I think it gives you some good data.
Absolutely. And it's a skill, huh? It's a skill. I mean, tracking accurately, it's not easy. It certainly doesn't come easy. You've got to educate yourself, and you've got to be honest with yourself. I'm a bit of a creature for habit. So for me, a lot of the time it's quite straightforward, because I'm eating really similar things every day. Which again takes away a bit of that decision fatigue, and, makes a lot, if I'm a sucker for making things or working smarter, not harder. Prioritize time with my family, and that's probably the main reason why I train so early in the morning, is hey, they're asleep, so it's like free time I get to myself. I'm not missing out on the afternoons after work. I can help out around the house, everyone's got their own reasons and their own motivations behind doing what they do, and it seems to be working pretty well for me so far.
Yeah, it sounds like it. Well, tell us a little bit about, so what have you learned from like these experiences with the different races and the different distances? What have you learned with your fueling? You know, did you do something before that didn't work? And now this is, I know you're using the Morton now, but any lessons learned from all these different training experiences?
Yeah, there are quite a few. One of them, I've touched on those cramps before. I got really focused on why I was cramping, and I got down this big long rabbit hole of online of people marketing these things like salt tablets salt tablets work for people, no doubt. But you know, just got hyper focused on my intake and my nutrition during my running, and probably went overboard and missed the forest for the trees. Once I started focusing far more on the conditioning aspect and making sure I was training effectively, I got a coach. That probably was one of the biggest things that changed my training, was I got a coach to help me plan my weekly workouts and focus on the variety of sessions and, you know, training different systems and making sure that I was, you know, feeding myself right on long runs.
Sure.
So, yeah, that was probably one of the big things. And that all came about from just not staying in my own lane, just always peeking over the fence at what the other people were doing, and not realizing just how unique we all are.
For sure.
And we're all bumbling from one thing to the next. And the main thing for me is when I did make mistakes like that, I learned from them and tried to put them into practice for the next event. Sure. And it's worked pretty well so far. And from that ultramarathon experience the first time around, learning that it's a marathon, not a sprint. Life, that is. It's marathon's a pretty good analogy for life. Approach it in little bite-sized chunks, and you know, progress slowly. It was slow progress over time, consistently, habitually, just leads to so much growth. And trying to bite off too much each time is just a one-way highway to burnout and just falling off the wagon. You see it. I mean, you see it time and time again. It's one of the whether it's an advantage or a pitfall. You can cut it up however you like it with respect to social media. But with so many people putting so much of their life out there, you see the people struggling, right? And you kind of just sometimes you want to grab them and say, "Come on, guys, come on. There's a better way." You just hope that they learn the lessons and ideally find what works for them. I think I found what works for me, and I had to make a lot of mistakes to get here though.
Yeah, I know. I think taking one day at a time and just like you said, like brick by brick and finding what works best for you. And, you know, and sometimes we got to go through those harder lessons to realize, you know, like maybe those aren't the distances that I enjoy. You know, I like the marathon. Yeah. I can do training in a way that I enjoy. I can add all this cross training in that's helped me be stronger and injury free. I mean, all those things that you have found through this trial and error time is, you know, part of your journey, you know, and I think that's a critical piece.
Exactly, and you've got to enjoy it. If you don't enjoy it, what's the point? What is the point? I mean, I wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning, and I can't wait to grab the key off the hook and go to my shed, open up the gym, and get at it. I love it, and I couldn't dream of that, you know, 5 or 6 years ago. It's unbelievable.
Yeah. I was just going to ask you kind of mindset changes that you've seen in yourself. What have you seen over this journey?
I mean, it's the discipline more than anything. I mean, early on, it's the discipline didn't come naturally to me whatsoever. It's, you know, same as everyone else. You do something for a few weeks and fall off the wagon, and you do something else for a few weeks and fall off the wagon again. And you'd get to January 1 and like, this is going to be my year. And
this is it.
It never was. It never was, Kim. And then, but a month before surgery, something just clicked in my mind. I don't know what it was. I don't know whether it was the fact that I'd seen people have so much success, and I'm like, "All right, this is it. This is my shot. I've lived a long time as an obese person, and I'm done with it. Not anymore. That's it." So, yeah, I joined the gym about a month before surgery. Started going a few days a week, and got really lucky with a great PT who was really respectful, and I got a few free PT sessions with my gym membership, and he was really respectful. I told him all about what I was doing, what my plans were with, you know, having the surgery and I'm going to lose weight, and he's like, "All right, well, let's do this." And he was great. Wasn't a shouty guy. And then just over time, it got easier and easier to go every day. And then cause I was going every second day. And then when I started running, I was doing running every second day and strength training every day. I'm like, the routine that I was able to develop just became a really great way to live my life. I was, you know, up first thing in the morning, I had this time to myself, which felt like it felt like a time of the day that I'd never experienced before. It was like this secret life hack that, you know, you get an hour or two in the morning, the sun might not even be up. It's quiet. There's no hustle and bustle. You can just do what you want to do. And
that's right.
I love that time of the day. It's my favorite. It's comfortably my favorite time of the day. And over the time, that's just got stronger and stronger. So, you know, you start doing things long enough. Your mind doesn't give you the choice after a while. It's not a choice to get up. You want to get up.
Sure.
It's just what you do. It's just what I do. Life. I just get up every morning.
Yeah. Just do it. One foot in front of the other and go out there and do something you enjoy. And you've found a routine that's worked for you.
Exactly. And one of the big parts of that is sleep. So sleep, having that sleep hygiene now is, It's one of my non-negotiables is, you know, I'm in bed by 9 p.m. And I find out if I'm getting 6.5, 7 hours sleep, then I'm like an Energizer bunny. It's good sleep, good, great quality sleep. No more sleep apnea. No more waking up through the night. It's just boom, wake up.
That's awesome.
Hop, bugger. Yeah. And that's probably been one of the biggest changes to my life is that sleep.
Yeah. And what's one piece of advice that you would give to someone that maybe wants to, you know, try these longer distances, marathons and longer? What be some advice that you've learned from your journey that you think that would be helpful for someone else?
Don't get greedy. Don't get greedy too soon. So take your time. You don't just get yourself to 5K, nice and easy. Once you get to 5K, that's great. You don't have to go to 10K then. Right. If you don't want to, don't. Just because everyone else is doing it. If you don't want to do a half marathon, don't. But if you do, that's awesome because running is bloody great. And if you do, take your time. So I would recommend if people are moving up in distance, especially from maybe when you're starting to run more than an hour, I would recommend getting a running coach or someone who can really help guide you and give you some accountability for not getting a bit arrogant and not getting a bit ahead of yourself. And that can give you some guidance with nutrition and recovery days and making sure that you're putting all those pieces of the puzzle together. Because running can be really hard on your body. There's no denying that. It's great, and it's great at building, you know, different parts of your body to be strong and that sort of thing. But you've got to do it in a way that is safe and sustainable. And that means slowing down and taking your time. That's always going to be my, and people that reach out to me for running advice, because I don't get a lot, but I get the odd question. I probably sound like a broken record because that's what I say, and that's probably not what they want to hear. It's probably what a lot of people probably don't want to hear that. They think, oh, I can do 10Ks or just run a marathon.
Right.
No, that's not the case. Yeah. What you'll end up with is a stress fracture, or you'll end up hating running in 8 weeks' time and you'll never do it again.
Yeah. Find a distance that you enjoy that you can do. And if you want to build on it, great. And if not, do it. Who cares what everyone else is doing? I know, you know, it's hard to not look around and,
of course it is.
This is the cool thing on the internet. I got to try this. You know, it is.
But this guy did that on Strava and this guy did that on Strava. And
I know. And I also like that you said to work with a coach, because I think that that's important too is, and I've had lots of guests that said the same thing, which is ask for help. It's okay. Like save yourself some time, find an expert in the area that's going to be able to lend you that advice so that you have a really great plan and hopefully help you prevent injuries and illness and being worn down by doing it the proper way so that you can actually achieve the goal that you're working towards.
Yeah, and find one that's really communicative. So not someone that's just going to print out a PDF and send it to you and, you know, you pay your money and you get a new one next month. Someone that actually reaches out, you know, that watches what you're doing, that, you know, is able to, you know, have that two-way communication is pretty important. So everyone, like I said, everyone's unique. We're all different. We all have different lives. We all have different stresses. We all have, different likes and dislikes. So having someone that will give you that personalized time is really important.
Yeah, I agree. I love this time. Thank you so much for your time today. I so appreciate you being here all the way from Australia. I'm just so thankful. Thanks so much for just agreeing to come on today.
Oh, no, I've had a great time. The time's flown by. I appreciate it.
I know. Well, can you tell everybody, where can they reach out to you if they want to ask you questions, get some advice from you? Where can they find you?
Instagram's pretty much the only real social media that I use.
Okay.
I mean, people can find me on Strava as well using my name, but Instagram at ads_in_control. So ads in control. Okay. Pretty fitting username these days. I like to think I'm pretty well in control of my, of my decisions and my choices. But yeah, that's Instagram for me, and my DMs are always open. I'm more than happy to have a chat around anything.
Awesome. And I'll put your information in the show notes too, so people can see that and click right on it. It'll go right to your Instagram page so they can reach out and ask questions. Thank you so much for all your time and advice today. Again, I so appreciate it.
Thanks, Kim. I hope people find it helpful. So I really appreciate the opportunity.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, as a reminder, you can watch this full episode on my YouTube channel, which is the Active Bariatric Nutrition channel. Give it a subscribe to it and a like, and then you'll be alerted when a new video is posted. And feel free to share this podcast with anyone that you think would find this information helpful. I think today's episode is so helpful just because everyone that comes on, it has a different journey and different experiences. And I so very much value all the information and experiences Adam has shared today. And then just certainly you can follow me on Instagram, which is at Active Bariatric, as well as my Facebook and TikTok pages. And then if you're interested in learning more about my one-to-one bariatric nutrition coaching services, you can go to my website, which is www.activebariatricnutrition.com. So thanks everybody again for joining us today. We will do this again next week. Take care. Thanks, Adam.